Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about the six-month recruitment rate. This is a metric we haven't covered in much detail before, and it's a very good metric to understand where you are in terms of your growth cycle. So, let's get stuck in. Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Very well. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent.
So this week, we're going to talk about the KPI, which we haven't covered yet, at least I'm not aware we have, which is the growth of the six-month customer recruitment year on year. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, but it's basically customer recruitment. And we wanted to have a KPI so we can actually measure that in a meaningful way. And so what we found was if ever we had a client that had kind of growth had dried up, usually it pointed to this KPI. And what it is it basically is the number of customers you recruited over the past 6 months from that date backwards, and then looking at that year on year. So, you know, it's difficult to do it month by month because you might have, you know, let's say you do brochures or Easter's falling in a slightly different month or something like that. You're going to recruit some customers in 1 month and then maybe recruit them the next month, the next year. And so therefore, you need to do it over 6 months to give an average of the customers recruited in the past and then look at that year on year. And that gives you very good insight of whether or not you are recruiting enough customers to sustain growth. Because you really want, if you want to get growth, obviously your existing customers are going to churn. Let's say you're selling baby clothing or something like that. Those people, those customers are going to, their children are going to grow past the size where they could buy clothes from you. So therefore, you need to be recruiting customers to fill that funnel
essentially
all the time.
I think it's quite a hard stat to get your head around, but essentially it's like it manifests itself. And this is why it's interesting is because, let's say, you know, we would say, you know, the average conversion rate for new customers is about 2%. So if you only had new business in there, 2%. But if you had existing customers buying, you know, that's where you get the 5-6% conversion rates. So if you are just looking at your conversion rates and going, hey, our conversion rates are 5-6%, brilliant, tick. But actually, that is just existing customers buying, and you've not got any new customers coming through in your site. At some point, those existing customers are going to stop buying, and they just fall off. So you have to then focus on recruiting your new customers. Otherwise, you're going to stop growing. It's like you could just go, "Oh, conversion rate's 5%." Well, of course your conversion rate is 5% because you've got loads of existing customers buying, you know, and it masks problems. It really hides problems in your site.
Yeah.
You know, it's dead easy.
Take like Black Friday, for example. You know, you might think, oh, we had a really good month this month. Black Friday is really good. But if you don't split your sales down in terms of existing customers and new customers, you might see that actually your new customers have dwindled to half what they were over the last 6 months, and actually you're just really milking the existing customers, which is, you know, great in the short term, you had a good month, but you know, what's the impact of that going to be at Christmas? Because you're going to go into Christmas with a lower house file, less new customers to actually, you know, go and buy more and more, you know, ongoing. So I think the trouble is with Google Analytics is it doesn't show you how many of those purchases were new customers and how many were existing. So you have to work that out yourself. You can do it in Excel or or there are tools that do it for you, but just be able to see that and monitoring how many sales were from new customers and existing customers. Because, you know, particularly some of our and we always say there's more money in the list. If you are trying to, you know, this is going away from customer recruitment, but if you are trying to increase your revenue, one of the best ways is to do it from your existing customers and then monitoring those guys separately year on year to understanding how much more you are getting out of your list gives you an idea about whether those things are helping. So at the same time, you need to be recruiting. You need to be getting the customer recruitment funnels working. And so therefore you've got to optimize those.
I think it's really basic what we're trying to do with e-commerce growth. You know, you have to recruit customers in the first place, and then you have to get those customers to buy again. And that's it. And you know, if you've got a high average order value, you know, and maybe only people are only buying once a year, you know, that's your business model. That can be okay. If you've got a low average order value and, you know, and they're only buying once a year, like say it's £30, that's really going to affect your growth. Mm-hmm. But it, like really, all e-commerce is about recruiting profitably and getting them to buy again. You know, and that's obviously repeat business with lifetime customer value. And obviously, let's assume you know, this stat, this 6 month recruitment rate, is assuming that you've done those two things. You know, you've got your recruitment strategy right, and you've got your retention strategy right. And it's then to protect the business. So you might be 2 or 3 years in to this, but if you're not then looking at that recruitment rate again, you get complacent. And you think, we're great, everything's fine. And it isn't. And you might be hiding a massive problem. You might be fine for another 12 months, but in 12 months' time, you're going to fall off a cliff. Yeah. You know, your business is going to start to really, really suffer.
Well, I think also, I think you can get it down mathematically to kind of say, if we want to double our turnover by the end of next year, we need to be recruiting this many customers each month because we know that the lifetime value of those customers is worth X. And so it becomes, you know, rather than kind of, you know, finger in the wind, kind of hoping that in 6 months' time you're going to be able to hit your targets, you can know that today, this month, whether you're in the right position that you should be for that future growth, rather than kind of, you know, just kind of thinking, oh, in that month when we need to hit that huge target, we're just going to massively up the AdWords budget. Because a lot of businesses don't work like that. They have a lot of fundamentals that need to be in place before the growth can happen systematically. So it tells you
it's a really, really clever stat, because you have to work out your lifetime customer value, you know, your whole budgets. Absolutely, you're absolutely right. You need to be able to say, in order to hit our 6 million turnover target next year, we need to recruit 800 customers in the next 3 months.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to miss it, because we know our existing customers buy on average twice a year.
So if we dig into that, let's say someone's got a problem with recruitment. They've seen that dive down. It's lower than where it was last year, but they still want to grow. Then you need to start looking at your buyer's cycle. So the buyer's cycle for certain products is very quick. So like car parts, for example, if someone wants a car part, the buyer's cycle is literally that day, usually, or the next day, 1 to 2 days. Whereas if you're buying, someone's buying expensive furniture, the buyer's cycle can be anything up to a month, and it's a lot more drawn out. And therefore, your recruitment strategy will change depending on the type of site you've got. So let's say you're selling furniture. You have a buying window that's long. So you have the luxury of a little bit of time to grab the email address when they come to the site through an offer or some kind of marketing hook device, and then warm that prospect up with a welcome series and a series of retargeting through different sites. So what you want to then build, if you've got the time, is a retargeting, what we call a retargeting stack. So when someone hits the website and give the email, and then you think, well, if we've probably got about 14 days, for example, for this, you know, we've done the stats, got about 14 days before they actually make the decision, or they're going to make a decision during that 14 days. What do they need to understand about, first about furniture, and then secondly about our furniture, and about what it's going to do and how it's going to complete the job to build and why it's the best one? What do we need to communicate and them to understand so they actually make a decision with us rather than someone else? And there's a lot of stuff that we're teaching people on the mentorship, people about uncovering those anxieties and finding those main anxieties and those main objections, and also the main aspirations that people have around that product that you need to communicate over that period of time. And because we're dealing with people who are distracted, you know, we have to show them the same message a few times during that window. It's not like, you know, if I said to Ian, oh, you know, this furniture's got these new special joints on the corner, so therefore it's a lot better than the imported ones because it's made here in Britain and it's got these and it's very solid. We might have to show Ian that three times on the remarketing stack for him to actually get the message. And we all would have to do it very visually so that he hasn't got to read an essay to understand those points. You know, maybe an image, maybe an elephant standing on the table, and it goes, well, that kitchen table is actually strong enough to support an elephant. That's pretty good. And it's, you know, it's a thousand words.
Well, I think what you're basically talking about is your recruitment strategy. And essentially, let's assume now that, you know, you've realized that, oh God, we are not going to hit our £6 million target unless we need to recruit more customers, because we cannot milk the existing customers anymore. We're already emailing them once a day, and we're already following them around on Facebook. We can't. There's nothing else we can do. We're already pushing loyalty points. We're already pushing VIP, free delivery. You know, we're doing everything we can. We've got a great reactivation program. We're giving them £20 off if they don't, you know, buy within a certain time. You know, we're really pushing them hard. And you go, oh my God, we're going to be miles away from our 6 million. So let's say you then need to spend some money to recruit them. But what you probably find is that you can't spend any more money because the site, it just becomes unprofitable, because your site isn't just good enough. And that's when you need to go back to those KPIs. You need to say, well, how can we increase the revenue for the same marketing budget? And the only way to do that is by looking at the KPIs that we keep banging on about, which of course is your average order value, your add to basket checkout to order. They're the ones that are going to influence how good your recruitment is. And it typically goes like this. You know, you'd be able to spend, let's say, £5,000 a month before it becomes unprofitable. So you then need to do some optimization and change your KPIs and get the average order value up, increase the conversion rate through those add to basket. And then you go, well, now we can spend £7,000 and we're still profitable. And then you have to do some more optimizations around your KPIs. And then eventually you just keep repeating that. But I think that's probably where a lot of customers are. I think a lot of customers that I speak to are saying, well, we can't milk our existing customers anymore and we can't recruit anymore because the budget we're spending, it just doesn't become profitable. And that's when you hit a glass ceiling. That's that glass ceiling we talk about. You know, you might be stuck on 5 million for the 3 years and you can't get past it. The only way is to focus on those KPIs, you know, the business metrics, going back to that mathematical scalable model. You know, you need to get the average order value up from £30 to £50. You know, otherwise, we're just never going to be able to get past 5 million. You know, the answers suddenly, yet again, are in that dashboard. You know, the target dashboard is there.
And if you are a big customer and you're doing multiple millions, you can then actually segment that off and you can say, right, I want to look at those KPIs, the ad to basket rate, just for new people coming from AdWords, for example. And then you can say, right, well, in order for us to actually move the needle on that, because we can see that we can spend a bit more if we could, what would the ad to basket need to be on that channel? And how do we get that up? And then you can go into that channel and you go, well, you know, 80% of that traffic is actually coming from this type of campaign selling this type of thing. So therefore, those landing pages, there's actually only four landing pages on the site. So those four landing pages are the ones where we're actually going to move the whole needle for the customer recruitment. And so what is it that we need to change on those four pages? And who else is it in the market who's actually going out there and stealing those customers at the moment from us? And what are they doing differently?
You know what? That's the lovely thing. That is the lovely thing about e-commerce. That, you know, and we obviously talk about, you know, the importance of paid, you know, and how you've got to get that working for your business. The lovely thing about it is you could see all this in front of you. You know, you can see who is dominating your industry, you know, which of your competitors are the ones, because you can see how much they're spending on AdWords and you can see what positions they're in. And then you can see their landing pages. You can see their adverts, their welcome strategy. You can see their offer architecture. You can see it all. It's all there.
Yeah.
You don't have to guess. You know, it's obvious.
You can see their ad copy. I mean, you can go and see their best performing ads over time. And in an ad, Google ad, you know, there's only so many characters. And therefore, they have to use their best copy in those characters. And if you look at, like, you know, five of their adverts, you'll see a theme. You'll see that they've found out that delivery is a really big deal and tracking of delivery is a really big deal. So they're all talking about tracking delivery, or they found out that the returns policy is a sticking point. You know, I was looking at Loaf yesterday compared to, you know, one we were doing a consultancy product for, and Loaf had free delivery, free returns policy on furniture. And the company I'd been asked to look at had got a returns policy which was not on the basket page, not on the checkout, not on the product page, not even in the footer, but hidden inside the terms and conditions. And even in the terms and conditions, it didn't make any sense. Mm. And so you suddenly go, well, that's why Loaf has been able to scale, because they have worked out the key anxiety and then they have turned their policies into something that will allow them to recruit.
Yeah. So definitely. It's all there, isn't it? In front. And the reason why we know that we like to look at the paid ads is, you know, because, and we look, and the key to it is that we can see what positions these adverts have been appearing in. And for how many days they've been up there. And the logic is that if you know, a competitor has had, you know, an advert appearing for a PPC keyword, you know, in a high position for the, you know, for the last 600 days, you know, in position one, it's like, wow, it's obviously working. You know,
Google
wouldn't put you there. Or the company's just really stupid and they're spending loads of money, but that's never not for 600 days.
No.
So you just cut, you know, you look at it and you copy and you go, you know, it's all there.
Yeah. There's the key. There's the key points, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what I've got to have on my site. And if you think of the advert as almost like a promise to the customer, so you're promising something in the ad, which is what they're interested in. And then the landing page needs to deliver on that product's promise. So that if you're saying about your delivery is good, then on the landing page, you need to say, you know, you need to have something that proves that on the landing page.
Well, it's like we're saying, you know, you need to prime them, don't you? You need to basically get them in. So, you know, everything's consistent. So, you know, you're bringing people in that is already optimized for your site and the products that they're landing on. You know, if they're anxious about delivery and free returns, then you're bringing them in. You've already done quite a good job of actually convincing them of your USP and why they should buy from you.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about general recruitment, aren't we? I mean, essentially, it's like, right, you know, how are we going to convert more initial customers? And that, of course, is your offer architecture, your anxiety squashing, your add-to-basket stats, all this, the market square test. Again, market square. Mm. Get back to the market square.
Yeah. And it's always a case of if you're small and you've got no authority, but you've done business with someone who is big, you can borrow that authority, or say you've got featured in some magazine or something that has got authority. When we started out back in the day, I was actually interviewed last week by someone, and I had to go through the whole story of how we started out. And I talked about the first big logo we had on the agency, which was Comic Relief.
Mm.
And that we were just two guys in Stoke-on-Trent and working in a very small office at that time, and suddenly we had Comic Relief on our portfolio, and it was like, it was just a door opener, wasn't it? Because we were borrowing authority from something that was very well respected that we'd done work for, and it was such a different conversation. So if you haven't got authority, you can borrow it from someone else if you get featured in certain things.
I remember back in the day, for some of our early clients, we used to say, go and take out a little advert in the Telegraph newspaper or the Daily Mail. And then as seen in the Telegraph. And obviously it's not quite possibly the right thing to do. But, it was a way of trying. Well, it was, it was trying to demonstrate, that there's trust and credibility there. And that's what we did. And a lot of clients did that initially. It's a stepping stone for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it just gives them the authority where they haven't got anybody. And especially a lot of startups we're working on the mentorship things, is like that people come and they're just like, they're worried. The customer's worry is first, is
trust and credibility. Yeah, trust and credibility is the hardest thing to get right. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard, because if you're just small, you've got nothing. Mm-hmm. It is really hard. So, I think techniques like that.
And the thing we mentioned it last week when we were, was that big furniture was made, wasn't it? And if you go into the Wayback Machine and you look where they were, where they didn't have any trust and authority, their messaging was very different back then about what they were putting on the site compared to what they do now. Now, when people go to the site, they pretty much have heard of Made, and they're huge and they've got thousands and millions of reviews. So they've got, the authority.
So they can, they can swap the offer with that authority, because they've got the authority. They then don't need to be so aggressive with that USP and that offer.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't have that social proof and you're smaller, you've got to have the most amazing value proposition, the most amazing offer. Because otherwise, why would people take the risk buying from you? They're not. Let's face it, if you're small, you've got like a lot of our customers, when they start, they've got no reason to buy from you. They've got no trust, no credibility, no social proof, no offer. It's like you wouldn't buy from yourself, if you saw this, you landed on this page. There's nothing there. There's no reason. And that's, and as you get bigger, you get more social proof, you could then lower your offer and your value proposition, because you like you say, you're building up this brand, and that takes a long time. Yeah. Well, that's quite key, isn't it? I've only just sort of realized that, you initially, if you've got no source of proof, you've literally got to give them the most, like, amazing deal to get them to buy, because otherwise they're not. You wouldn't buy from yourself.
Well, you are displacing somebody, aren't you? If someone buys from you, then they're not buying from somebody else.
Exactly.
So who are you displacing, and why? And why, why can you think you can go up against someone like Made if you're selling furniture? And why, what, you know, you probably can't go head on. You're probably a flanking strategy, picking a different product, a side product that they're not doing particularly well, and saying we're gonna service this type of the market, and we're gonna do it better than those guys, and we're gonna borrow authority from these, you know, niche magazines who cover some kind of special woodworking or something like that. That's really well known for people who live in these types of houses, or something like that. And therefore, you speak a language that someone that big can't speak, because they are having to go for the whole wide broad audience.
Yeah.
And I don't think people, you don't have to get locked into that little niche forever. You can just build on it, and then you can go, oh, now we're doing this, and now we're doing that.
You build on it, and then you build up your social proof, and you build up your customer list, and then you sell them other things. And I think it's like, you know, yeah, you can change over time. Your business will change and grow. You know, so if, you know, we might suggest, right, you need to do a really good welcome deal initially. You don't have to do that forever.
No.
You know, it's just kick-starting you, getting you moving.
And also getting some metrics going, because if you've got no momentum and you've got no movement, you can't then work out what to sell to them next. So if you're not recruiting any customers, you can't go to sell. You can't do an upsell. You know, you might start off and just be breaking even on these ones, but then you go and add that upsell and you go, you know, oh, brilliant, now we're doing this. But if you can't really do that until you've got a little bit of movement.
I
was saying, someone comes to me with an AdWords campaign and they're going, I've got no sales at all, and it's absolutely, and I'm like, I won't touch it, because it's like, It no sales to a few sales is, there's a huge gulf between those two things. If there's some sales, you can optimize it so much easier. You can say, okay, I'm only going to bid on these keywords because they're not doing that. I'm going to go and bid more on that one. That's working. So what message is working on that? Great. I'll augment that. I'll make that message bigger on the landing page. Because if I've got no sales at all, I'm like, you haven't even found the dartboard yet. You're blind. You don't know where it is. It's very difficult. I haven't done AdWords stuff, but it's certainly a lot harder.
Yeah, well, I think we were saying this the other last week, that you know, initially when you're 0 to 1 million, you don't care about trying to make any money. You're just trying to prove that there's a scalable business here. Mm. You know, do free returns, do free delivery. You know, do give them a 20% off welcome offer. You know, just do it. Because you need to test it. You need to push. Mm. Because, when e-commerce becomes super profitable is when you've got a really good active customer house file. You know, how many customers are buying from you. And then you can drop these emails in there and these little offers. And then, you know, you send an email and, you'll do a, 200,000 quid in a weekend, from email. That's
obviously, if you're selling something that does repeat purchase. I mean,
that's where you've got to think that out.
What is the back end? Even if you're selling kitchen tables and that's a one-off purchase, if you start building a list of 10,000, 15,000 customers, you then think about that back end. You think, well, they all bought a kitchen table. They must be willing to buy something else from me if I had the right product. What is that product? Because, it's money on the table, isn't it? I think we'll leave it there, Ian. I think it's late, okay. So we'll finish there. There's a lot of good points there. And thank you very much. And if you haven't watched the case study, it's in the show notes, and we'll be really happy to see you again next time.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Bye.